to be very, very important, because that's going to be a meeting where they, meaning Putin and Zelensky, make a deal. And I don't want to use the word divvy things up, but you know, to a certain extent, it's not a bad term, okay? Imagine the scene. Trump accepts Putin's invitation to hold the next meeting in Moscow, at which Zelensky is put in the position, by Trump, of either agreeing to Putin's territorial demands or facing further destruction of Ukraine. Call it another Munich or another Yalta. Either way, it's a sellout of an independent country by a U.S. president who believes he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mel Gertov, James Kemp, and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lysowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News.
The whole world is watching the genocide in Gaza, and local communities in the United States are speaking out.
I'm Lisa Loving with the Pacifica Radio Network, and this is Community Report.
Today, our lens is on the San Francisco Bay Area. We start with our Pacifica Radio affiliate KPFA in Berkeley with their report on street demonstrations in San Francisco against the Israeli Defense Forces' targeted killing of the entire Al Jazeera reporting team in Gaza last week. The demonstration was part of a national day of protest against the IDF's recent killings, as well as their murder of nearly 200 Palestinian journalists there. Then, the most recent report from Gaza, with Rami Al-Maghari still on the job in the midst of famine. And KPFA's official statement redoubling support for their Gaza correspondent of many years. Then, Rosie Boltman reports on a Palestinian restaurant in Oakland that's been charged by the United States Justice Department with anti-Semitism. Then, all the way to WMNF in Tampa, Florida, for a report on a local boycott of the Chevron Corporation. But first, here's Lauren Schmidt from KPFA in Berkeley and Rami Al-Maghari's weekly dispatch on the Gaza War.
Six journalists were murdered in Israel's August 10th strike on Gaza City, the single deadliest attack on the press during Israel's assault on Gaza. Notably, all of the deadliest single attacks in this conflict have been deliberate killings, which the Committee to Protect Journalists, an independent nonprofit organization that promotes press freedom worldwide, defines as murders of journalists for their work. So far in 2025, Israel has killed 13 journalists. That's up from 10 in all of 2024. Since the war broke out, 190 journalists and media workers have died, surpassing the total number of journalists killed worldwide in the previous 3 years combined, marking the deadliest period for the press since the CPJ began tracking journalist fatalities. The committee says that the targeted killing of Anas al-Sharif and his Al Jazeera colleagues sends a stark message. If Israel can kill the most prominent Gazan journalist, it can kill anyone. Mourners in San Francisco's Union Square called out mainstream media for what they described as complicity.
For over 675 days of the genocide, they endured unimaginable conditions to carry Gaza's voices and images to the world. They sacrificed their lives to broadcast the truth, exposing Zionist war crimes of destruction, starvation, and annihilation. And yet Western media failed them, choosing complicity over truth. Western news outlets have censored, distorted, and neglected Gaza's reality, whitewashing Israel's crimes, amplifying racist propaganda to justify mass slaughter. They must be held to account for propagandizing the extermination of our people.
The UN has condemned the targeted attack on journalists, calling it a grave breach of international law. The Committee to Protect Journalists stated that the world needs to see these attacks for what they are, quote, a deliberate and systematic attempt to cover up Israel's actions, close quote. With international press barred from entering the besieged territory, the world relies on Palestinian journalists who are themselves facing starvation in constant danger. Salah Nayem, the news director at Al Jazeera English, said it is very difficult to get reporters into Gaza and is calling on other news organizations to step up. Protesters are urging national media outlets to rise to the occasion and support Palestinian journalists.
We call on all organizations, media sites, press unions, journalists, and supporters of justice worldwide to act now for Gaza before it is wiped off the map. We ask that they target national and local media outlets, because if the world looks away, Gaza's annihilation will happen in darkness. We must act now and call on all media organizations to amplify voices from Gaza before it is too late. We demand an end to the blockade on foreign press entry into Gaza, an investigation and a prosecution of those responsible for killing our journalists.
Protesters marched from Union Square to the Reuters corporate office in San Francisco, where they displayed a cardboard cutout representing journalists, marked with press vests covered in blood and target symbols, surrounded by candles and photos of the slain Al Jazeera.
That it is our responsibility, our duty, to hold news outlets responsible. News outlets like Reuters, here in this office building, we hold them responsible for their complicity in the genocide.
American media outlets, including the New York Times, have been called out for passive media bias in their coverage of Gaza, especially when compared to their reporting on Ukraine. IDF officials have repeatedly told media outlets that the army does not deliberately target journalists. In a statement announcing the killing of Al-Sharif, Israel's military accused the journalist of heading a Hamas cell and of advancing rocket attacks against Israeli civilians and troops. However, those claims are unsubstantiated, and Israel has a long-standing, documented pattern of accusing journalists of being terrorists without providing any credible proof. The Committee to Protect Journalists has joined 15 other media and human rights organizations in a joint letter demanding an end to the forced starvation and targeted killing of journalists in Gaza. KPFA News has also issued a statement condemning the murder of journalists, which you can read on our website, kpfa.org. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
More from Pacifica's Rami Al-Magari.
Here at the Al Rimal UNRWA run prep school for girls in western Gaza City, hundreds of displaced Palestinians from northern Gaza City seem shocked over the latest Israeli decision to take over Gaza City. Many of them have been displaced for multiple times since the war began nearly 2 years ago. Ghazala is a displaced mother of two boys, her husband in a wheelchair from a back injury.
We are frightened, especially since we have little children. My husband's electric wheelchair is broken as its batteries have run out. Likely, we won't be able to help him flee, as we can walk, but he can't. We do not have a regular wheelchair. When we were displaced from Beit Hanun, we brought him a donkey carriage. But for now, we have no clue as to what to do. Only God knows.
Muhammad is another displaced Palestinian from the same shelter school. A single man in his 30s, he has suffered from injuries and displacement for multiple times. He expresses frustration.
My message to the world is, help stop this war, this catastrophic war. My message to negotiators, they have to concede everything for the sake of the residents, not for the cause that has already faded away, and not for Jerusalem, which has a God to protect. Palestinian negotiators, who are supposed to be Palestinians, should concede everything for the sake of the Palestinian citizens.
At the political level, the Islamist Hamas party called Israel's latest military escalation into Gaza City a coup against the mediated negotiations process. In the meantime, efforts by mediators are underway. Dr. Raed Najm is a Gaza-based political analyst.
Mediators are exerting efforts to contain this situation. They are trying to convince Hamas to reverse their positions and show flexibility in order to reach a temporary truce, separate from outstanding issues including the disarmament of Hamas or leaving the governance of Gaza. There are some indicators that Hamas could show flexibility, but it's unclear due to the fact that Hamas is siding with the Egyptian Islamic Brotherhood group, which has criticized Egypt's mediator.
The new Israeli plan involves an Israeli army takeover of almost the entire Gaza Strip and establishing a civil administration in Gaza run by Israel and forcing hundreds of thousands of Palestinians by October 7 this year south in the coastal enclave. For Pacifica Radio, KPFA, I am Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
The KPFA News Department condemns Israel's killing of six Gaza journalists and the forced starvation of our Gaza correspondent. Our colleagues are dying. Our colleagues are being killed. Our colleagues are being murdered. As one of the few U.S.-based radio stations with a reporter in Gaza, the KPFA News Department condemns Israel's targeted killing of six journalists on Sunday, August 10th, 2025, five of whom worked for Al Jazeera. We send our condolences to all those impacted and our solidarity to the award-winning network. As of August 12, 2005, the Committee to Protect Journalists has documented the deaths of 185 journalists and media workers across Gaza, the deadliest period for the press since it began tracking journalist fatalities. Even these numbers are likely an undercount. The CPJ's regional director, Sarah Kudwa, said in a statement, Israel is murdering the messengers. Israel wiped out an entire news crew. That's murder, plain and simple. We track these numbers daily, and like all others, the death count will almost certainly rise, often increasing in real time as we prepare our daily newscast. It is a chilling reality. And the reporters who survive face starvation and constant danger. In late July, Agence France-Presse warned their last reporter will die working under current conditions. As Politico published, in Gaza, journalism is not just under siege, it's deliberately being starved. For us at KPFA News, this is personal. Rami Al-Mighari has been our correspondent in Gaza for 17 years. He is a widowed father of four. His home has been bombed, and now he is starving. We have sent additional resources to support Rami and his family, but the money we send is useless without food. The cost of flour, once $2 a kilogram, has been inflated by over 5,000 1,000%. Sugar prices have increased by 10,000%. Basic food like cheese, eggs, meat, and fruit are unavailable. Rami has to burn plastic to fuel his kerosene stove since diesel is no longer accessible. When Rami manages to find food, it comes with extreme danger. He lives and works amid ongoing bombardment. Despite all this, Rami continues to go into the field and support his family on these limited resources. The emotional and physical toll he endures is unimaginable and something most journalists should never have to experience. Yet he tells us at KPFA he feels a deep responsibility to tell Gaza's stories because they are the only voices able to. He has witnessed widespread destruction and death, including horrifying hunger-related deaths of children, and yet he persists. His commitment to journalism and reporting for KPFA News and our network with hundreds of affiliates is unmatched. After 25 years in the field, he sees his work as his duty. Voices like his offer the only balanced coverage and truth-telling we hear about Israel's war and devastation in Gaza. And this is precisely why they are being punished, targeted, and killed. This is why KPFA News speaks out today to condemn the slaughter of our colleagues in Gaza and to demand justice for those who risk everything to tell the truth and bear witness for the world. Being a journalist in Gaza right now is one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. No foreign journalists are allowed into Gaza, placing the entire burden of coverage on local reporters. Israeli forces have even refused to let journalists document aerial views of Gaza during airdrops, forcing many to rely on satellite surveillance to track the destruction. Journalists are civilians protected under international law. Deliberately targeting them is a war crime, yet the CPJ has confirmed 26 journalists were directly targeted and killed by Israeli forces. Colleagues on the ground have stopped wearing press vests, believing these now mark them as targets. Our colleagues have died not only in the field, but also in their homes, alongside their families, killed in vehicles and vests that were clearly marked press. Some, like Anas al-Sharif, were murdered while reporting near hospitals or in tents. KPFA News categorically condemns the killing and starvation of journalists. Silencing those who bear witness is an assault not only on the press, but on the world's right to know the atrocities of war. This is more than a humanitarian catastrophe. It is a crisis of press freedom.
Two of those segments were by Lauren Schmidt, news director at KPFA Radio in Berkeley, California, and Rami Almagari's weekly report from Gaza. You can find all his reporting online at kpfa.org. Next, Rosie Boltman reports for Pacifica Radio on the Oakland coffee shop being sued by the U.S. federal government for anti-Semitism.
A small Palestinian-owned coffee house in Oakland, California, faces a lawsuit from the Department of Justice over allegations of anti-Semitism. On Wednesday, around 100 rallied in the coffee shop as the owner spoke out publicly for the first time.
Jerusalem Coffee House cannot exist anywhere except Oakland. And I know the DOJ knows this. And the DOJ's attempt to join these lawsuits is an attempt to not only silence myself and Jerusalem Coffee House, but is an attempt to establish a precedent that this type of movement work will not only not be accepted, but will be demonized, brutalized, will be prosecuted, falsely prosecuted, and smeared and destroyed.
That's Abdul Rahim Harara, owner of Jerusalem Coffee House. Early this year, Harara was hit with back-to-back discrimination lawsuits from the Anti-Defamation League and Brandeis Center. Recently, the Department of Justice announced it would be suing the business as well. The lawsuits represent two plaintiffs, who both came into the coffee house wearing blue hats with a white Star of David front and center. One of the caps also read, "The people of Israel live," written in Hebrew. Both men claim to have been asked if they were Zionists, that is, whether they support the creation and maintenance of a Jewish state, which is now Israel, and were then kicked out of the coffee shop. The plaintiffs say this was an act of anti-Semitism based on their Jewish identities. The three lawsuits facing Jerusalem Coffee House argue that Harara violated both California and federal civil rights law. But Harara's lawyer, Glenn Caton, disagrees.
Well, it's pretty simple. They say that that the two private plaintiffs were discriminated against because they're Jewish. We absolutely deny that. Whatever was going on was because of their actions, not because of their religion.
The press conference Wednesday also featured multiple Jewish speakers that expressed objection to the lawsuits against Harara. AJ, an East Bay resident and member of the Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, argued that the Stars of David embroidered on the two men's hats were not symbols of Jewish pride, but symbols of violence.
There are a growing number of Jews worldwide, including myself, who do not identify the star as a symbol of our Judaism any longer. After we've seen it burned into the faces and cut into the skin of Palestinians and carved into Palestinian land to claim it as Jewish. If you need a reminder of the ways the State of Israel officially uses the Star of David as a symbol of terror, look up the cases of Musab Katawi, who had the star carved into his scalp by guards in an Israeli prison, and Orwa Sheikh Ali, who was blindfolded and beaten by Israeli police, who then branded a star into his cheek. Zionists have turned the Star of David into a symbol of violence, colonialism, and genocide. As a Jew, when I see someone with a prominent Star of David, especially if it is accompanied by the colors blue and white, it sparks fear even in me. In many Jewish communities, this has become a symbol of Zionism and support for Israel's genocide, not a symbol of the Jewish religion.
During public comment, Peter Truskier came to the podium to defend Harara and Jerusalem Coffee House. Truskier said he had been living in the East Bay for over 50 years and was the descendant of Holocaust survivors.
I first became acquainted with the Jerusalem Coffee House late last year when there was an article in the newspaper about the incident that I think started all of this. And then JVP, of which I'm a member, sent out a call for people to come and support, which I did. And since then, I've become friends with Abdul Rahim, and I have to say that there's no anti-Semitism I've felt at this coffee house. In fact, I felt nothing but welcome. It's like coming to a family establishment.
In addition to addressing the lawsuit facing Jerusalem Coffee House, the event heavily emphasized the genocide in Gaza. Tables for healthcare workers for Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace sat at the back of the room, and virtually every speaker made mention of the mass killings and starvation going on in Palestine.
My words feel small in the shadow of lives lost, the children buried under the rubble, the decay of homes, memories buried under the weight of American bombs. I see the charred remains of my people, young children gathering the pieces of their siblings into blood-soaked plastic grocery bags. For over 600 days, Gaza has endured unfathomable suffering. Humanity is being erased through bombs, torture, rape, and now starvation.
Rabbi Kat Zavis of Beit Tikkun Synagogue drew connections between images from the Holocaust and images of starving children in Gaza today.
Judaism teaches us each person is a universe unto themselves. The images of starving Palestinians hauntingly remind us of the images of Jews starving in Nazi ghettos and concentration camps.
But in the midst of injustice abroad, Jerusalem Coffee House provides resources and education for activists and community members alike.
The brainchild of the coffee house is actually an organization called Jerusalem Boxing Club, which is a organization that provides trauma-informed self-defense for women, predominantly Muslim women. And it provides them a space where they could engage, provides them a space where they could learn how to defend themselves, establish discipline, and be thoughtful in the way that they engage their public community.
Harara's lawyer said it was Jerusalem Coffee's very nature that made it a target of the Department of Justice.
Out of the playbook of disempowering people and movements that goes back to COINTELPRO in the civil rights movement, where the FBI and the Justice Department went to hubs of community organizing, and the people from Oakland know the history of the Black Panthers and the way the Justice Department and the FBI made it its business to try and stop the organizing and empowerment of people that this government has oppressed. That's exactly what it's doing here.
The lawsuit against Jerusalem Coffee House comes as the Trump administration has vowed to aggressively combat anti-Semitism in the United States. Shortly after the Department of Justice announced it would be suing Jerusalem Coffee House, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi critiqued the business on Fox News, adding, quote, "Anywhere in the country, if you do this, we're coming for you," end quote. The cases against Jerusalem Coffee House are currently in discovery, meaning both sides are still collecting documents and building their cases. No trial dates have been set yet. As the lawsuits develop, Abdulrahim Harara remains hopeful and thankful for community support.
It just adds more work, you know, but thankfully we've pulled in community. We have resources to combat these frivolous lawsuits, which are baseless and unfounded. And, soon, inshallah, they'll just be a moment of the past, and they'll just, you know, similar to Zionism, they'll live in the past, the dustbin of history.
That was Pacifica's Rosie Boltman reporting from Oakland, California. Next, Florida residents have launched a boycott of the Chevron Corporation because of their support of the Israeli government. WMNF's Josh Holton has the story.
The death toll in Gaza is staggering. Estimates from the Gaza Health Ministry count at least 61,000 Palestinians have been killed since Hamas's attack in October 2023, which killed nearly 1,200 Israeli people. But beyond those killed in the bombings and shootings, Israel's siege on the territory has prevented Palestinians from receiving food, water, and electricity in the occupied territory. Carla Correa is with the Pinellas Democratic Socialists of America and said their boycott seeks to impact Israeli operations at their source, their energy.
Israel's energy production relies on the supply of fossil gas. About 71% of the electricity produced in 2023 used fossil gas, and two-thirds of it was supplied by Chevron's Tamar gas field. Tamar holds the main supply contract to the state-owned Israeli Electric Corporation through 2030. And we want to make it clear that Chevron is a direct partner in the genocide and against and in the apartheid that Palestinians face.
Boycotts require significant widespread participation to have an impact, but Correa says other fossil fuel boycotts have been effective in the past.
In the 1970s and 80s, a grassroots campaign to boycott Shell aimed at pressuring the company to withdraw from from apartheid South Africa took off globally. The boycott had an enormous impact on Shell's revenues and contributed to a groundswell of backlash against companies continuing to do business with South Africa's apartheid regime. So people are against the genocide. People want to be able to do something material to stop the genocide, to end the genocide, and this is something that we can do.
The boycott calls for Chevron to, quote, divest from all Israeli energy projects and for a just transition to a renewable energy system that serves people, not war profiteers, unquote.
That was Josh Holton from WMNF in Tampa, Florida. Before that, Rosie Boltman, reporting from Oakland, California for Pacifica Radio. Before that, Rami Almagari, reporting from Gaza. And before that, Lauren Schmidt, news director at KPFA Radio in Berkeley. I'm Lisa Loving with the Pacifica Radio Network.
are listening to KBOO Portland.
By the mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews,